because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Mary Spacusa.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol. Mary, I'm well aware the U.S. Supreme Court issued a major ruling today on same-sex marriage, but Wisconsin was one of the 36 states where it was already legal. So
as of last year?
Yeah. Let's talk about those and yesterday's Obamacare ruling yesterday. So let's talk about, first of all, thanks for sitting in for the vacationing J.R. Ross.
Of course.
Of WisPolitics. I really appreciate it.
Good to see you.
Thank you. I still think the biggest issue is the impasse over the budget. Don't you?
Yes. Republicans control both houses. We have a Republican governor, and they cannot reach a deal.
And the biggest stumbling block seems to be transportation. Again, as we've been saying, you know, for two or three weeks, as of Monday, it'll be a month since Joint Finance met. But I think both sides dug in even deeper this week. And I'm so intrigued by a map that Wisconsin and I worked up. And 33 of the 63 Assembly Republicans sent a letter to their five Democratic leaders saying, if highway projects are going to be delayed because, number one, Governor Walker will not approve raising the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee,
right,
we cannot accept his level of bonding, $1.3 billion. It's just too much. Then highway projects will have to be delayed statewide. And these 33 Assembly Republicans, including three on Joint Finance, said the Zoo interchange, which you drive daily, and we'll talk about that in a minute, will have to be delayed. When you look at this map in red, isn't this a pretty impressive display of rural-urban gridlock here?
It is. I mean, it is a huge chunk of the state, and obviously nobody who probably travels the Zoo interchange really frequently, but it is an impressive number.
It really is. And in some of these areas that are not highlighted in red, they're represented by Democrats. I mean, let's look at Superior. That's Nick Milroy. Next to him is Beth Myers. And the La Crosse and Madison area, they're represented by Democrats. No legislator likes to see their local highway project delayed. And that's the reason for this impasse, right?
Yeah, I think so. At the same time, if you think about delaying the Zoo interchange, it is ripped up right now. There is a ton of construction. There are crashes pretty regularly, people driving around looking pretty confused. I just don't see how they would delay that project. Maybe delay a portion of it, but yeah. I don't see how they would just, you know, what would they do? Put it on hold and have everybody drive like that for 2 years? I don't see how it would work.
Well, and you have a very unique perspective on this, because when you're not working in the Journal Sentinel's Madison Bureau, you're in the downtown Milwaukee newsroom.
Right.
So you drive that daily. What is it like?
You know, when I drive in at, I usually get on the road about 4:30 in the morning. It is smooth sailing in the morning. I get to the office by about 6, no problem. Getting back is a little trickier. I leave at 3, thankfully, instead of 5. But by 3 p.m., there is backups typically to Miller Park. And I understand that it goes way back further the later you go. So if you're looking at rush hour, you are going to be sitting there. I typically sit there for about a half hour, maybe 15 minutes to 45 minutes a day, typically a half hour, trying to get out of Milwaukee.
So you are done with your job in the Journal Sentinel newsroom at 2 o'clock.
At
3 p.m. You're trying to get home. You got an adorable daughter that needs to be picked up.
Daycare closes its doors at 5:30.
And you're losing 15 to 45 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, coming back.
Right. And so, if I leave late, then it's longer. If there's a crash, it's longer. Maybe a disabled truck, it's longer. There are times where I'm calling my husband saying, there's a crash on the Zoo interchange. Can you go get our little one? So
you understand why Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Alberta Darling, mm-hmm. co-chair of the Finance Committee for the mm-hmm. Senate, are saying it would be dangerous and foolish to delay the Zoo interchange repairs, right?
Well, right. And it's not obviously just me who's sitting there. There are tons of truckers that use that who are going all over Wisconsin. There are tons of commuters, tons of tourism. A lot of people are driving on the Zoo interchange. It's the busiest, isn't it the busiest chunk of highway
in
the state?
It is.
Important to the economy, important to tourists, important to people trying to get to and from work. So, yeah, I don't see, unless they delay something like a piece of it, mm-hmm. I don't see how you would just leave it like it is.
Okay. So you don't enjoy going through the Zoo interchange now. And it's scheduled
every
to be
day
done.
I sit there and question what my choices I've made in my life.
Your career choices. Yeah. But your
not career, but just how am I sitting here?
Yes. Yes. Is there anything you do sitting there at a standstill? Westbound through waiting to get through the zoo interchange?
You know, I often listen to music or listen to Spanish to practice, but even like making a phone call, I just don't want to be distracted because people are stopping unexpectedly or hitting their brakes or swerving to get out of one of the closed lanes. And right. I just feel like it's kind of an accident.
Do you see much
road
rage when people are tied up 15 to 45 minutes?
Oh yeah. And then people are like flying and you're trying to, you know, you're driving, you're thinking you're going a respectable speed limit and somebody is just tearing up behind you trying to make up for lost time.
So you can't fathom. The zoo interchange is now on schedule to be completed by 2018.
Right.
It's a $1.7 billion project. You cannot see how it could be pushed out to 2019 or 2020, right? Commuter Mary?
I guess I'm biased, but the commuter in me does not see how that will work.
And
unless somebody has a genius idea, I haven't heard of how
and
that
And that's would why Senators
work.
Fitzgerald and Darling are so adamant.
I think it is. I can see how it would be a safety issue if it's delayed for two more years.
Now, you're a veteran of the state capitol. Any idea potential compromises that could break this impasse? Maybe not. But
you know, it's my understanding that Governor Walker has been meeting with lawmakers. I believe there was a meeting in the East Wing yesterday morning with the governor, Speaker Voss, Representative Nygren, Senator Darling, Senator Fitzgerald. I could be misspeaking on who all was there.
Yeah.
But I think that he is now realizing, I believe he is calling lawmakers one by one, maybe senators one by one, to try to, you know, be more hands-on on getting a deal. And I guess that's maybe what it's going to take. I don't know if it's if it's give us prevailing wage and we'll agree on this, or changes to prevailing wage, or you know, just coming up with a number, but this could drag on. I mean, think of how long this has dragged on. We haven't seen this in any of Walker's budgets until now. It has been, he's been signing it. I think typically he signs it the last weekend. Late in June, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's obviously not going to happen.
Okay, yeah. Our budget year ends next Tuesday, June 30th.
Yeah.
But it's not a crisis if we don't have another budget in place, is it?
It's not. I mean, state funding will continue at its current levels, so it's not like the state is going to grind to a halt or parks will close or anything like that I know of. But it obviously, I think, you know, we'll talk about Governor Walker's presidential plans, and that's an issue. And also just, like, Republicans control everything.
Yep.
Are you guys coming apart at the seams?
That's a good question. Meanwhile, new topic. You know, WEDIC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, this is a gift that keeps on giving to reporters like us, isn't it?
Not to the staff at the WEDC, but yes,
no.
To reporters. I'm imagining there's some hair loss going on over at
yes.
that agency.
Well, it was 1 week ago that Department of Administration released, I don't know, 170, 190 pages, and
yeah.
then WEDIC released 700-800 more pages
yeah,
of documents.
And together.
So they were asked by two Democratic board members to list all the major awards that had no staff review. In other words, WEDIC gave out money without final staff review.
Right.
And that was a pretty amazing list. I mean, $62.5 million to Kohl's. Kohl's said in the paperwork they would create 3,000 jobs. They actually created 473. All this is WEDIC data. Kestrel Aircraft, 665 jobs they anticipated created. Actually created 24, and just $15 million to Plexus Corporation, expected jobs 350, and actual jobs zero. Now, there's another category. Some of these companies were able to keep jobs in Wisconsin, and we couldn't show this on the list.
Retention, right.
Yeah. So this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, $124 million.
Yeah, you saw the headlines. Total grants without staff review, $124 million. And, but you covered a press conference at which the governor talked about this, didn't he? In terms of, wasn't he asked about, in light of this new data, did WEDIC create some major venal sins? How did he respond?
He had three news conferences on Wednesday. Or three events, and he took questions at two of them.
Right.
That one was actually at Hartford that
okay.
I did not go to. I went to the bill signing in Milwaukee
oh, that's
with
right.
the gun rights bills,
and we'll talk
and
about
then
that in
went
a minute.
To the Pfister afterwards, where
okay.
He did not formally take questions. He did answer a question about whether he had asked Weedick's head, Reed Hall, to resign, and he insisted he had not, and said that it was an absolute lie that he had.
Yeah.
So
part of the documents released by Weedick showed how cabinet secretaries, former chief of staff to the governor, Keith Jilks, deputy cabinet secretaries, went out of their way to give VIP treatment to a Milwaukee area businessman, William Minahan. His company, BCI, which the State Journal originally noted, got a $500,000 bridge loan, but has not repaid any of it, so it's collapsed.
Yeah, that company has fallen apart, and I don't know if the stories this week about how Minahan was actually promising money to leasing agents for luxury cars, saying that once he got some more money from Weedick or from the state, that he would be able to pay off some pretty nice car loans, like a Maserati.
2010 Maserati
yeah.
that he agreed to lease for $2,705 a month.
Another one was a luxury sports car, maybe a Nissan or something that looked pretty...
top of the line. Mm-hmm. All this sets the stage for a pretty interesting Weedick meeting on July 20th, doesn't it?
Yes. Is that July 20th now?
20th. I thought it was... That's okay. Next week.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's July 20th.
Okay.
And then, as you alluded to, two Democrats on the Weedick board, Assembly Democratic Leader Peter Barca and Democratic Senator Julie Lassa, ask Reed to resign. Now, that's a non-starter with Governor Walker, right?
Well, Governor Walker put out a statement saying that these occurred, or the vast majority, if not all of them, occurred before Reed actually took over at Weedick.
Yep.
They pointed to the ongoing problems. I believe that WEDC pushed back and said that Lassa and Barca had voted in favor of about two-thirds of the loan money.
Yes.
So I guess they could say maybe they weren't aware that they weren't underwritten and they weren't given the information, but they may have voted differently if they had known.
Right. But can we agree, Weedick, very troubled agency.
From the beginning, yes.
And Senator Dave Hansen put out a release, shut it down, in addition to Lassa and Barca calling for Reed to resign.
It's just seems like it has been a problem from day one. And Governor Walker has said, you know, that he was next, these mergers that he's now backed away from, but talked about doing things more slowly, and that maybe the rush to create the WEDC after he took office, I think he may have done things differently.
Well, let's talk about the three changes now. The governor said, let's no longer give awards to specific companies.
Loans. Right.
And, by the way, let's take me off the Weedick board.
Right.
And those are two major changes.
And let's not merge other economic development agencies. He backed away and pulled that out of the budget.
Right.
So I think some of them, he said, this isn't a result of the audit, but some of the changes were clearly a result of the
ongoing problems. Now let's talk about the press conference you covered, because the context I found very intriguing. 1 week exactly after nine African-Americans were shot to death in a Charleston church, the governor signed two bills loosening gun laws.
Right.
Did anyone there, was he asked about any contradiction? Can you talk about those bills?
He was. So one of the bills ended the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases. Republicans have called that a time tax, as we talked about. The other one allowed off-duty, retired or out-of-state law enforcement officers to concealed carry on public schools or public school grounds. He was asked about it. His office was very quick to point out that the bill signing had been scheduled before the shooting. I think they pointed to a tweet from Sheriff Clark on May 11th saying, excited that this is taking place in my office. Basically, these bill signings are happening. They did not reschedule them. So it was scheduled before the shooting. They did not reschedule. And part of the reason, when Governor Walker was asked about it, he said he didn't want to back away and give the impression that these bills somehow would have contributed to that. He was saying that the school bill was something that law enforcement officers have been asking for, that they felt like it would make schools safer. Obviously, that's a controversial one.
This is the
one.
Ability for off-duty and retired officers to carry guns on school property.
Right. Yep. Okay. So he basically did not back away and was not apologetic. He kind of said, you know, the focus, he talked about how he thought the focus should be on the victims in Charleston. He talked about how the acts of, that the man was the, you know.
The alleged shooter.
Alleged shooter. Thank you. Right. Was evil and racist. and basically tried to separate that from gun rights or expanding gun rights. So he was pretty determined. I mean, he was not apologetic for not rescheduling, and he basically kind of doubled down on the bills, as did Sheriff Clark, and both of them are big, and the NRA is obviously big fans of both of theirs.
Right, but what intrigues me is when he was asked whether the Confederate flag should come down from the Capitol grounds on the Capitol of South Carolina.
Yep.
He kind of finessed that. Well, you were there, I wasn't.
What did he do?
So
he basically, he was asked about that, the Confederate flag issue, as you might recall from last weekend when he was initially asked after the shooting. He said that it talked about it as a should be like a state decision.
Mm-hmm.
He later, Wednesday when he was at the bill signing, he said that he had actually spoken to Governor Nikki Haley, that she actually asked him to hold off and not say anything right away so she could get out in front of the issue, saying that like basically it should come from within the state instead of from the outside. Other, Mitt Romney, other likely 2016.
Romney said take the flag down.
Oh, right away. He tweeted it. He put out a very direct statement on Saturday, I believe he tweeted it. And Governor Walker was much slower to come out. Right after Governor Haley made her announcement, he said, I tweeted my support for her. I just wanted to let her get out in front of the issue. And it does sound like he did speak to her on Saturday. It might have been after he started getting questions and he called her, but he did kind of, that was new information to me. I hadn't heard that before.
Okay. Now let's talk about the two Supreme Court rulings.
Okay.
On a 63, the Supreme Court today, 6-3, lined up establishing a national constitutional right to same-sex marriages.
Right.
Wisconsin was one of 36 states.
Was that 154?
Nope.
And yesterday's was 6-3.
Thank you.
Yes.
Today's was 5-4.
Right.
Thanks for the
Roberts
correction.
Roberts was with the liberals one day and conservatives the other.
Yes. Thanks for the correction. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's start over. On a 5-4 Supreme Court ruling, they found a national right for same-sex marriages.
Yep.
Now, Wisconsin, as you were alluding to, we were one of 36 states where same-sex marriage were legal, even though our Constitution outlawed it because of what? Federal judges last year?
It was a ruling, I believe it was early June of last year, because I think I was going to be leaving on vacation and had a very late Friday night, and I remember the courthouse marriages, the celebrations at the Capitol and in Milwaukee. So yeah, just a little over a year ago, there was a lawsuit brought on behalf of, I think it was 8 same-sex couples that the ACLU brought forward with them or on their behalf.
Yep.
And it was ruled that the ban was invalidated here in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So I don't know how much it'll change here in Wisconsin, but obviously it's a huge victory for same-sex marriage.
What do you read into the governor's statement, which he just posted on Facebook, calling it a grave mistake?
Right. It's interesting because in the 2014 race, when he was running for re-election as governor against Mary Burke, he was very quiet about same-sex marriage. He said that he had supported the ban on same-sex.
He voted for
the
constitutional amendment.
Yes, that he his opinion hadn't changed, but he also said his opinion didn't matter, that it was settled in Wisconsin, and basically kind of tried to make it almost as a side issue that reporters were mentioning, but not. I think he said nobody asked me about this on the campaign trail except for reporters.
Right.
So he really didn't say much about it in 2014. But now, obviously it's different. We'll talk about the presidential primary.
Yeah.
And he was much more outspoken today and said it's called it a grave mistake and called on a constitutional amendment to basically reinforce
states' rights issue.
Define marriage. And he said that recently, I think in April. He said he mentioned the constitutional amendment issue and maybe a national interview. So that's not the first time he said it, but he really reiterated that today pretty strongly.
And then yesterday, and I'll try to get the court line up, 6-3 yesterday, 5-4 today, they upheld the Obamacare provision saying if you qualify, middle or low income, you can get health care subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wisconsin had a lot riding there. In fact, now let's go to a chart from Families USA. I was really interested. 166,000 Wisconsin residents could have been affected had the Supreme Court tossed out the health care subsidies. And Family USA broke it down by U.S. House districts, and I was intrigued. Republican Congressman Sean District, 7th District, had the most, 27,000.
Oh, Sean Duffy. Uh-huh.
Sean Duffy, thank you very much. Thanks for the correction. Followed by 8th District Congressman, another Republican, Reed Ribble, then Ron Kind, a Western Wisconsin Democrat, 21,000, and so on. But the takeaway here is what these Wisconsinites getting their health care through the Affordable Care Act didn't lose. It's just pretty intriguing.
Right.
But now here's my question. These two U.S. Supreme Court rulings, do these give, do you think, Governor Walker new now let's talk about the presidential campaign, new openings to open new campaign themes as he lays the groundwork to run for president?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, it's no doubt that the Obamacare ruling was obviously a victory for Obama, President Obama, but I also think, I don't think Governor Walker wanted to have that many Wisconsinites kicked off health insurance on his watch.
Do you remember what he said prior to the U.S. Supreme Court ruling? Washington created this mess. Washington
needs,
should solve
right,
it.
Right. He said they are going to try to kick it to the states and we're not going to take it. So he certainly doubled down on his position. But if that many people had been kicked off health insurance, he could point the finger at President Obama. But I don't, it wouldn't have been popular here. So I don't think, you know, I don't know. I think Obama was the big winner in that ruling, mm-hmm. but I think Governor Walker probably did breathe a sigh of relief.
Well, you've covered an awful lot of press conferences with Governor Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to say he hasn't offered his version of any major changes to the Affordable Care Act?
He's talked about wanting to repeal it. He's talked about wanting to, you know, the repeal and replace thing is a common theme, but I have not seen a specific platform or plan of what we want to replace it with.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And now let's just note quickly, the 13th GOP candidate got in today, or this week, Louisiana Governor
Bobby Jindal.
Bobby Jindal. And the governor's got to make an announcement in July. Why?
Well, if he wants to participate in the first debate, which I think is August 6th,
okay.
I mean, he's been polling well, but there's just so long he's going to keep polling well if he doesn't get in the race. He's really got to participate in that race. And so how long is he going to put it off to get in that debate? So, yeah, I don't see how he gets around. I don't see how he backs away from that. That date. And, you know, Dan Bice had reported July 13th.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably a...
I heard that again yesterday.
Yes, and he confirmed, I guess he confirmed to Greta Van Susteren the week of July 13th, so maybe not July 13th itself, maybe that Tuesday or Wednesday. But I don't know that we're going to have a budget by then.
I don't think we'll have a budget by then.
Unless some miracle happens,
we could. Okay,
right.
We're not going to have one.
Conceivably, we could.
Yeah, okay.
But you'll notice that when Governor Walker had gone to Badger Boys State, I think it was last Thursday night,
yes.
He said something about, well, after the budget year ends June 30th, which is different than him saying after I've signed the budget.
Right.
And a lot of us took note of that shift.
Yeah, because words matter, even though as nuanced as they are.
Oh, yes, although yeah. Wasn't it Scalia who said words have no meaning? But yes, that was, and when Governor Walker was asked about that at the bill signing, he actually said that he kind of criticized the PolitiFact flop on that one and said that he prefers to live in reality, and he doesn't know how he could have flopped on something that hasn't happened yet. But we'll see.
Final question on this subject. The governor's optimistic that we'll get a budget pretty soon. And
the next few days.
Speaker Voss says, the governor's more optimistic than me. Do you see a major rift between the governor and Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, or is this just a family feud?
You know, Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Fitzgerald have obviously had their differences in the past. We haven't seen quite the public sniping that we saw. Gosh, I think it was about a year ago, but they're clearly not seeing eye to eye on
right.
this. And it's interesting because if you look back to when the brothers Fitzgerald ruled the legislature during Act 10
12.
And the things that they did, and the discipline where they had their members marching in lockstep, all on the same page, passing things, I don't see how Act 10 would have passed if it had come up now at this point. Do you? I mean, Voss and Fitz do not, it seemed like the Fitzes were like this and Voss and Fitz are like
that's
this.
A very good question. When the governor came in January of 2011, he had a lot of momentum, and you had the GOP majorities in both houses that
right.
were feeling their oats, and the governor said, I'm going to be bold. Tommy had told him to be bold, and so he took the initiative and said, this is the bill. I'm going to reach for a lot, and I think he surprised the GOP leaders in both houses.
Ellis.
And they said,
fits.
Okay. I mean, it took a while. It was very ugly, and the Democrats left. But it was, so that's a very good question. Yeah. Would Act 10 pass today?
I don't know.
The final issue, you didn't cover this, but Wisconsin and I did. Let's note the results of the primary election in last Tuesday in 33rd Senate District. And that's the heart of GOP-rich Waukesha County. In Tuesday's primary, State Representative Chris Kapinga got 52% of the vote against challenger Brian Doro, former Waukesha policeman who now runs a criminal justice program at Waukesha County Tech College. And third candidate, Michael Langner, a physician, only got 2%. That sets up a special election on July 21.
Right.
Representative Chris Kapinga and Democrat Cheryl Shattuck. But you and I know how Republican-rich that 33rd district is.
Yeah, it's in some of those races, it seems like the primary is kind of the general election.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And just one stat to end with, when Cheryl Shattuck ran against current Senator Paul Farrell, who will be resigning to become full-time Waukesha County exec mm-hmm. last November, want to guess at the percentage of the vote the Democrat got?
Gosh, 24?
26, you're very, very
so
close. Very, very close.
Okay.
Let's wrap up this way. What to look for next week in the Capitol? Whether
budgets,
white smoke?
Yes, exactly. Whether there is singing of Kumbaya or fights breaking out in the halls of the Capitol, I think, and what that means for Governor Walker and 2016.
And Chris Abele told the WisPolitics luncheon yesterday, it may be a month before we get a budget.
Maybe they'll pull the bucks out, but I think that that is not the preference of a lot of people.
I don't know that the bucks pass if they're pulled out as a separate bill.
Right.
It could be offered as a floor amendment. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, Mary, thanks for sitting in for J.R. Ross.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Mary Spicuzza.
And that's Rewind for June 26th.